and 101.1 FM.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join the conversation with myself and Anya Esther, 844-967-2789. My thanks to Anya for pulling down a couple of a hosting gig or two last week.
Yeah, Muchas gracias.
Well done. I was able to listen to parts of both. Always lovely to hear your perspective, and hopefully today you'll feel like weighing in some more. A lot to talk about. Just within the last hour, Nikki Haley formally filed the requisite paperwork to appear on the presidential primary ballot in her home state of South Carolina. So some breaking news here. If you don't recall, Nimarata Randhawa Haley, aka Nikki Haley, was elected and was the governor of South Carolina for 6 years, elected twice. She then was elevated to become the United States ambassador to the UN by Donald Trump, and she served a full 2 years, which seems like an eternity when you think about who Trump had in certain positions at different points in time. She served from basically January of 17 to December of 18. She's got experience. And I begin with Nikki Haley because some polling just came out. I think the Devils were talking a bit about it last hour, but really incredible here. Poll in Iowa just released. Trump still very far ahead in Iowa. He's at 42, 43 points of likely Republican voters in the primary. That's been unchanged since the last time they did this polling. However, Nikki Haley has surged and gained 10 points since the last time they ran this poll in Iowa. She is up to 16%. She is, in fact, in second place behind Donald Trump with none other than Meatball Ron DeSanctimonious from Florida, who's down 3 points. So this is actually part of the effect of the debates. Do debates matter? In fact, yes, they do. I don't think it is anybody can reasonably argue that Nikki Haley was not the winner of not just the first debate, but also the second debate. She seemed to be the only one up there operating on the premise that we need to act like adults and tell the truth all the time. You know, novel concept. And I think she landed some pretty good punches. My favorite two highlights is her basically giving Joe Biden his reelection campaign, which should be run on loop, which is Donald Trump increased the deficit of the United States by $8 trillion, and we need to be apologizing to our grandchildren for time in memoriam. That one. That little tidbit. And also when she told Vivek Ramaswamy that every time he talks, she gets stupider, which I think is a collective sentiment held by most Americans, because the man knows not what flies out of his mouth. Most of the time, it's just nonsense. But here's what I thought was more interesting. Of course, we can do the basic math on the radio, right? Like if 43% of the poll respondents who are likely Republican voters in that Iowa presidential preliminary caucus, then you get 57% undecided or voting for someone else. So if you do the math of all these other folks and you add all the rest of them up, Nikki Haley would be leading Donald Trump. You know what I'm saying? Now, let's just assume for argument's sake that if DeSantis isn't in the election anymore, those people go to Trump. Okay. So then you've got 59% for Trump. That's still a gettable margin for Nikki Haley, right? So I'm talking, Tim Scott's in third with 7%. Christie and Vivek splitting the fourth slot at 4% each. Doug Burgum, 3%, and Pence at 2%. Pence now out, RIP, no kidding.
RIP Pence?
RIP Pence. Oy.
Rest in Oy. Pence.
Rest in Pence, former vice president. She's within striking distance. And the thing that I find really interesting here is let's not forget that Trump lost in Iowa to Ted Cruz. Everyone's senator, the senator that everyone likes to hate, I should say. Even other elected officials from Texas that are also Republicans find the man to be simply intolerable. And he beat Donald Trump. So that's Iowa matters. It matters a lot. They're first. I just think this is going to be an area to watch. I don't know about you, Anya, but I just don't see DeSantis hanging on much longer. They've been lighting money on fire. He is on the downswing. He cannot seem to gain any traction other than basically holding on to folks who were already supporting him, more or less.
Yeah, it's quite sad to see him do this. I mean, for such a meatball, he is having such a hard time staying on a roll. He's bad at everything he attempts. It's so sad.
Indeed, the meatball's having a hard time staying on a roll. You heard it here. That's effectively the problem. And every time the man's given an opportunity to try to take a policy stand to distinguish himself, the only thing he knows how to do is go harder right.
Yep.
Like there's no modulation. There's no nuance. There's no deep thinking going on. And unlike Trump, and don't worry, everybody, you're not going to miss this. You're not going to want to miss the second half of the Maggie Dawn Show with Anya Ester, because Anya and I together have pulled some of the sound from that incredible interview at the University of Chicago's Institute of Politics that interviewed Bill Barr on stage with cameras and audio rolling on Friday. And I've got the greatest hits from that. DeSantis every time goes further right. And unlike Donald Trump, who doesn't have, frankly, the sophisticated either education or intellect to manage complex information or to express it verbally, which Bill Barr said on Friday, DeSantis is Ivy League 2 times. He was a JAG lawyer. The guy is very smart. So either he's like getting bad advice, or he can't discern good advice from bad, because listen, picking a fight with Mickey Mouse and taking your state further and further to the right, the rest of the United States does not want to be Florida, Ron. It's a faulty premise. And yet again, this past week, as it relates to the Israel and Hamas war, here comes Meatball Ron. Incredibly. Florida's university system, basically at the directive of Ron DeSantis, ordered all Florida state universities to shut down a pro-Palestinian student organization. The Students for Justice in Palestine have absolutely abhorrent policy platform positions, including that Israel doesn't have a right to exist as a nation. Okay? Terrible. But when they shut the student organization down, what they said was that they need to crack down on campus demonstrations that delve beyond protected First Amendment speech and into harmful support for terrorist groups. According to whom? Students say lots of dumb things. Old people say lots of dumb things. Middle-aged folks that have law degrees that are named Maggie Dawn on occasion say dumb things. The First Amendment protects terribly obnoxious, horrible speech. And if all it takes is the waving of magic Ron DeSantis's wand to say that by engaging in hateful speech, you now are giving support to terrorist groups, that is a really scary standard for a government to adopt. You can't test that principle. Now, if one of these Students for Justice in Palestine groups was engaged in activity that did in fact support Hamas, yes, not only should they be kicked off campus and silenced, but they probably would be subject to some sort of criminal investigation. My point here, we'll talk about Nikki Haley. We're going to talk a little bit about Mike Johnson and these stories that are coming out about a man he's claimed alternatively to have both adopted and then maybe taken custody of, but nobody knows where any of the paperwork is, and the guy who wants to remain nameless, which I respect. We'll get there in the next segment. But this, no wonder Nikki Haley is beating everybody else. She is the one who can actually hold a detailed, nuanced, and complicated conversation with American voters over the nuanced, complicated stuff that's going on in our world. Meatball Ron, no such luck. Meatball Ron, it's too much to ask him to both denounce killing people and taking hostages, as Hamas has done, and also denounce the suggestion that a state government or a U.S. government or an Israeli government has the moral right to withhold water and electricity from citizens, right? Hamas, terrorist organization, terrible, withholding water and electricity. I'm not sure when I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it this week, but we're going to have a discussion of what collective punishment is under the United Nations and other bodies of international law, because this is creating an enormous humanitarian crisis. Reports today, electricity flowing again in Gaza. But can you imagine? No electricity, no clean water. So, nuance, not a thing for Ron DeSantis. Can't do it. And apparently he thinks that if he keeps trying to out-Trump Trump, why does anybody want the imitation when they can just buy the original? I don't get it. I don't get the math. The math doesn't math. I think Ron is done. We come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this poll. We're going to talk about Mike Johnson's odd definition of family and weirdness around this man he calls a son named Michael. I'm Maggie Dawn. She is Anya Esker. We'll be back with more in a moment here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. In the booth is Anya Esther. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Come join our conversation, 844-967-2789. Phone lines are open. Text lines are open. So big poll came out. Nikki Haley surging into second place in Iowa behind Trump, now at 16 points, tied with Ron DeSantis. Nikki Haley up 10, Ron down 3. And my argument is, why would anyone pick Ron DeSantis when they can pick Donald Trump? It just doesn't make any sense. It makes no sense. And he keeps taking these further. He's trying to outright out Trump, Trump out MAGA, the original MAGAnator. Right. And it doesn't make sense. Throws a student group off camp, off all campuses in the Florida university system. I find what the Students for Justice in Palestine, one of their policy platform points is that Israel as a nation doesn't have a right to exist. That is abhorrent. It is contrary to what is going to be necessary to find peace in the Mideast. But no matter how abhorrent those words are, the First Amendment protects them. And to shut that down without evidence that they are actually engaging in support of a terrorist group is deeply problematic, because it allows Meatball Ron with his magic wand that he's stolen from Disney to decide whose speech gets to matter and whose speech gets to be heard. all very disturbing. This is all part of a movement. Mike Johnson's sort of the mascot of the Christian nationalist movement, whereby in service of religious freedom, in the name of your religious freedom, you take other people's freedoms from them. And I think, you know, the questions that are being asked of Mike Johnson about a young boy that he has alternately claimed to have adopted and then not adopted, but taken custody of, needs to be interrogated. Because if you're going to be the man that says, I get to determine what family values are according to my religion, and I'm going to use my religion and my assertion of religious freedom to take your freedoms away, then it's perfectly acceptable for people to ask questions about exactly what happened here. And I'm concerned about this, because I'll take at face value the fact that this man wants to remain private and we should respect that. But Speaker Johnson has used this man's existence in his life, in the speaker's life, to assert that he has some insight into what it's like to be Black in the United States. Statements which he's alternately tried to walk back and then stand behind, depending on whom he's talking to. But again, what happened here? If your values you're going to impose on me, then how did this person come into your life when you were 25 and he was 14? I'm curious. And Anya, you very graciously offered to share your personal lived experience having been adopted. So I'm really interested to hear what your take on all this is.
Ooh, gracious is an interesting word for it. More, if you didn't let me, my thoughts on this whole thing were going to overpower my brain, and you would have just seen steam coming out of my ears. Let me, as an adoptee, I just want to set something up for people in the world who are not adoptive. You don't have adopted children. That's not your lived experience. Hey, folks. Taking a child into your custody with no paperwork, that's not an adoption, that's a kidnapping. And we've all agreed on that for like 100 years. You don't get to just pick up kids and go, this one's with me now, and take it home. And for 10, 12, 21 years say, oh, he's my son, as a way of gaining political leverage. But that person does not have you on paperwork. You are not beholden to certain laws. There are not the certain checks and balances that are supposed to be happening to ensure that you're taking care of that kid. The things that happen when you adopt someone. I want to be super clear. What's happened here is not an adoption, and calling it that is crazy. And I don't mean that towards you, Maggie. I mean it towards everyone else saying it. This is one of two things. This is a kidnapping, or this person is being, you just can't do these things. You just can't say, this person's my kid now, and never put that through the proper authorities. That's just stealing a kid. You can't do that.
Well, and maybe there are some foster records that are sealed because the child was, they were a minor, a juvenile.
Potentially, right, yeah.
Occurred, right? I'll take that, right?
Sure.
But what you said about basically calling someone your child when the legal formalities of becoming the parent have never occurred in order to gain political leverage, especially when seen in the context of race in the United States and race in the state of Louisiana.
Yes.
And that this was a young Black man.
Mm-hmm.
It, like, his wife is white. The rest of his family, his other four kids are white. This is complex.
Very complex, yes.
To say the absolute least about such a thing.
Yeah, and especially to leverage the idea, like, because we've taken in this person who is Black, that means I understand what it's like to be Black. There aren't words for how dumb that is. There is that it's just not how that works, especially when you know, he's making these claims, and then this young man who's now an adult is nowhere to be found. And if that's his son's, or if that's this person's wish is to not be in the public light, great. But he's already broken that rule by flouting this, you know, waving this flag of this story around and saying, look at me, I'm such a good person. I took this person in.
Which he's created a hypothetical universe where he expects to be given credits and affirmations for what he claims was an adoption without providing the public any means of verifying whether or not this was in fact a positive and a healthy experience.
Exactly.
For this young man.
We have no idea what this young man feels towards this experience. He may have felt initially, oh, good, someone's taking me in. Maybe his situation ahead of that was worse. But hey, that doesn't mean that anything he's given, he should just be infinitely grateful for because it was worse before. No, he's a human being, and adoptees deserve more than the basics, folks. It's insane that we're saying that at this age.
this whole, we could spend a whole lot of time on this tyranny of gratitude framework, which pervades sort of adoption circles. That's very complex.
Oh yeah.
In cross-racial adoptions, the savior complex that is at play here, and overarchingly, as a society, children, no matter who they are, no matter whom they're parented or not parented by, every child deserves love, safety, a reliable source of food, a good school. These aren't things that children need to be grateful for. They are the absolute bare minimums that society should be providing, and yet we fail so very miserably. So I just think that it is okay and fair.
Opportunity at work in the Ad Council.
RPG came through the belly of the
air. Your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org.
Fleetwood Mac afternoon here on the Maggie Dawn Show with Anya Esther. You can always go get the Civic Media app from your favorite app store for free and listen to your favorite hosts and shows anytime, anywhere, crystal clear. Of course, you can join us this afternoon, 844-967-2789. We're talking about Nikki Haley's recent poll numbers in Iowa, the fact that Ron DeSantis is on the outs and he doesn't seem to understand what the word pivot means. All he does is just keep double, tripling, quadrupling down on being more right. Now he's going to, based on his magic wand that he stole from Disney, start censoring students on college campuses. We require nuance. We require people that can handle complex ideas. That's what we should require for our elected officials and our candidates. And while Ron DeSantis has the intellectual heft, he seems hell-bent on not deploying it, thereby, in my humble opinion, rendering him ineligible for service. I do not want the rest of the United States to turn out like Florida. Please help us. Let's go to the phone lines. If you want to join us, 844-967-2789. Jim from Appleton, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. What say you? Hello, Jim? I can't hear Jim. Mark from the SAC. You are on the Maggie Dawn Show. What do you have to say, Mark?
Yeah, well, your last comment just reminded me. This morning they played George Carlin again. He talked about how Republicans don't want us to be critical thinkers, that, or maybe it's just the powers that be do not want us to be critical thinkers. But getting to your two stories earlier, that the whole Mike Johnson, quote-unquote, taking custody of a 14-year-old when he was 25 just sounds kind of creepy to me. And maybe I'm being harsh, but it just sounds weird. And that it seems strange, these guys that want to enforce their biblical religious views on the rest of us, especially for a Baptist like Mike Johnson. I had to double check on my history this today because I looked it up. And the Baptists were one of the groups that were saying that there had to be a strict separation of church and state because they had been persecuted by the church state that existed in pre-revolutionary America. And they're some of the strongest proponents of having that provision in our Constitution and having that separation of church and state. And apparently Mike Johnson wants to, you know, establish some kind of
national religion. Yes, that's what he wants. He wants a national, he basically wants a declaration that the United States is a Christian nation. That's insane. And that's what we've got, like, time and time again from the GOP, far right Christian nationalist, either expressly or tacitly, and basically willing to, again, without saying it, endorse violence. The language, the rhetoric of violence, languaging of violence to use their assertion of religious freedom to take away the freedoms of other people who don't believe in their religion. That's really concerning. And that's the through line here. You look at Trump, you look at DeSantis, you look at Mike Johnson. This is who is now leading the Republican Party. The only exception to that is Nikki Haley. And I haven't done an episode on Nikki, and I will, but I want the election to sort of proceed some more. Because while Nikki Haley doesn't embrace language and rhetoric of violence, what she actually proposes in terms of policies are very, very concerning as well. Jim, we're going to try it again, my friend. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. What say you?
Hey, Maggie, can you hear me now?
I sure can. Go ahead, Jim.
Hello. All right. Ron DeSantis, what he's doing makes perfect sense. If you look at Trump, even on the Fox News snippets of him, he is not a healthy man, and Ron wants to take his place, which is why he keeps going farther and trying to out-Trump him.
It's quite the gambit, though, isn't it, Jim? I mean, he basically is betting on the fact that Trump will be criminally convicted or somehow psychologically disqualify himself before it's all done. And I just, boy, that's a weird way to run a presidential campaign, don't you think?
Yeah, it's a strange way to run one, but I think he's not looking at 24. I think he's looking at 28.
Ah, I think that's a whole heck of a lot of money to spend just sort of test ballooning 24, and that's probably why you're seeing the donor money dry out. Donors, they like to follow who's actually going to win and have a shot at things. They don't like to flush their millions down the toilet for somebody that's just trying to build a brand. So I think that might be precisely why you're seeing some of the problems in the DeSantis fundraising numbers.
Maggie, are you at all concerned that now that Ron DeSantis has the magic wand from Disney, he'll use it to bring out those broomsticks that remake themselves? He might use that technology to make some money for himself. Do we need to worry about that? Do we need to maybe call some Imagineers to fix this? What's happening?
I think we should put out the bats. Let's mix some metaphors and put out the bat signal.
Oh, wow. That's
for
that's
the Imagineers.
DC. They don't even own that. Whoa.
Yeah. Put that out for the Imagineers so that they can, is it Fantasia with the magic reproducing?
Fantasia, yes. That's
Fantasia
that.
With the magic reproducing brooms. Yeah, except I'm sure DeSantis would ban the brooms.
Yep.
If they're allocated to women who vote and other nasty women, like, mm-hmm. That would be bad.
Exactly.
So if that's a whole rabbit's hole. Whew. But all of this extremism, this lack of nuance, whether it's, you know, performative or otherwise, is part of what Bill Barr, I think, was just extremely brutally honest about this past Friday. Again, he was discussing his career with the University of Chicago's Institute on Politics. We're going to listen to a bunch of this sound because I think much of it is pretty scary. Let's see. Let's start with, since we're talking about Donald Trump the capacity? What do these candidates bring to bear? Why don't we go ahead and start with, this is going to be cut number four. And part of what I've been saying on this show for a while, which is Trump didn't expect to win in 2016. They were entirely flat-footed. They had no transition plans. None of this had been thought of or sorted out. They had no lists of people to appoint. Now, the entire Christian nationalist, uber right flank of the GOP, the Federalists, the Leonard Leos, they're all the Koch brothers, minus one, RIP. They're all lined up. They know exactly who they're putting into certain positions. This is what Bill Barr had to say about this. This is going to be cut for on you.
I'm worried that I think it's important that someone like Trump has people around him who give him straight from the shoulder advice, aren't yes people, aren't afraid of him, and you know, will try to talk sense into him when he goes off on some wild idea. And
do you see any?
I don't see that.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, I don't think there are going to be as many people around him as there were before.
Yeah, that's a problem. We don't run the government off of blind loyalists. That's not the way it should be. You actually want people who will disagree with you. So that makes me very afraid. That's why Ron DeSantis' brand of running Florida makes me very afraid. Because it's about compliance. It's not about who's got the best idea. It's not a marketplace of ideas. It's loyalty to a person and compliance with the person's party line. Can't even be called just a party line anymore. It's what Trump is saying. Let's listen to some more of what Bill Barr had to say. Let's do cut five again, because it's along the same line of thinking, if you've got it.
Well, I think his biggest flaw is because he's actually quite, it's a lot of it is a performance rather than substance. And it's, I think his basic gambit, what he saw was the great dissatisfaction in a large portion of the Republican Party or people who would be willing to vote Republican. And he has captured that partly by, you know, inflamed a lot of their anger and passions. And therefore, he's more interested in performing and getting a reaction from them than he is actually solving a particular problem. So there were occasions where he would take some action, hold up his executive order, so forth. That was the thing of the day. And then you'd go in and say, okay, now, Mr. President, that's all very good, but we have to do A, B, C, and D if we really want to nail this down. I dealt with it, you know. I want to do, you know, let's move on to the next thing. So I think that's, and look, I think a good leader has to be able to channel the frustrations and aspirations of the people in a constructive way and take account of the fact that he's president of all the people, and ultimately we need some degree of unity. We're all in the same boat, and if we're going to not cut each other's throats, we have to figure out a way of muddling through. And someone who is constantly rolling around in the mud and fighting at the drop of a hat and as sort of strictly in that mode, I'm worried about them getting us through.
Yeah. Bill Barr, anytime you listen to Bill Barr, he will sound about as boring as you can possibly get anybody to sound. But what he's saying is so frightening. And I've been saying it forever about Trump. Watch out, because this time he's actually ready. This is performative politics, as I've defined it. The use of leverage to self-aggrandize for no policy aim, no policy good, no policy purpose at all. And of course, you know, if somebody got on a big stage and said about me, that you're, you know, weak sauce, You don't focus on substance. You get mired down in the mud, having personal attacks and just lashing out. You know what I would do the very next day? I would tweet this about whoever criticized me. They're dumb, weak, slow-moving, lethargic, gutless, and lazy. They're just trying to get even with me. That person's a loser. Yeah, that would be how I would prove that critique incorrect, would be to engage in exactly the behavior that I was being critiqued about. We've got a few more cuts when we come back. I think he speaks slowly. It ain't all that sexy when he's saying it. But the words here matter. They matter a lot. It is exactly this thing that we're talking about this hour. And that is this extreme performative political brand that has completely co-opted the entire GOP, that engages in inconsistency after inconsistency, that engages in very harmful, divisive, violent rhetoric with seemingly no consequences. Seemingly no consequences. And now the selection of a Speaker of the House of Representatives from the Republican Party, who will not actually on the record say that Joseph R. Biden is the President of the United States, duly elected and justly sworn in. That is a problem. More Bill Barr when we come back. I'm going to wrap it up here with Anya Esther here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Join us for this last segment. We're ready to take your calls and texts. 844-967-2789. Keep it locked, everybody. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. She is Anya Esther. We are on the Civic Media Radio Network here on the Maggie Dawn Show this Monday afternoon. Join our conversation, 844-967-2789. We're talking about the elevation of form over substance, performative politics, the difficulty that's posed by candidates like Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump, the difficulty that's posed by a guy like Speaker Mike Johnson. These aren't nuanced approaches. These aren't approaches to policy that embrace the complexity, that allow for a diversity of backgrounds and opinions to be brought to bear on some of the most challenging issues of modern civil democracy. It's not that. It's the rhetoric of violence, of separation, of division, of silencing those that disagree. And I think that one party represents that. Now, do I think that liberals, on occasion, have too little tolerance for garbage that's said, not garbage that's said, by the opposing opinions, right? What began as this nomenclature of cancel culture. I don't get what you mean when you say cancel culture, except perhaps in the academic context, right? In the university context, where a professor or a speaker can be effectively silenced or drummed off of campus. To me, the best response to garbage speech is good, smart speech and trying to win the argument. But as with most claims to moral superiority coming from the right, here I find myself wondering, so it's cancel culture if it's a far right opinion that people want to shout down or silence. But if it's a left or progressive opinion that is being silenced, that's just good religious freedom. It's hard to follow. So let's take a call. John from Los Angeles, we've been sitting on this one for this hour. What are your thoughts, my friend?
Well, I just heard Fleetwood Mac, Goldust Woman, and wow, that's a great song. It's one of those that I can't figure out all the words to, but still a good one. Anyway, regarding politics, have you ever heard the saying, an enemy of my enemy is not necessarily my friend?
I've heard the original version, the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Well, not necessarily. Okay, now, I'm anti-war, and some of these Republicans are not supporting this war in Ukraine thing, which, hey, I see as not necessarily my friend, but I don't like war. Okay, that's where I'm coming from. But this two-party system is too two-dimensional. It's not realistic.
Well, I think it, John, to your point, thanks for the call. I think it forces certain factions within those parties to try to adopt more extreme views to get some airtime, to get some attention. Now, I don't think that that's happened on the left in a way that it has been as harmful to our democracy as has occurred on the right. But I agree with you. We probably are seeing, at least on the right, amongst within the GOP, perhaps the end of this binary choice, which I don't really think serves people all that well. Let's listen to a little bit more Bill Barr before we run out of time. Let's do cut three, and then we'll go right away to cut six if we can.
You to install your policies.
What do you think Trump would be like as president if he wins in 24?
Well, he's already saying it's going to be about retribution, and he's a very petty man, and it's all about him. He has a very fragile ego, and something happened to him as a kid, and I'm not going to spend time psychoanalyzing it, but every encounter he has to come out showing the other guy that he's better. It's all about the assertion of his ego, and I think he will be self-indulgent in a new administration, and won't be as effective as he could otherwise be, and probably things would start moving toward chaos.
Hey, Maggie, what was the next cut you wanted?
It's cut six. That's we're moving towards chaos if he comes back. That's how we can remember that one. This one's the limited verbal skills problem.
Muddling through, and someone who's constantly rolling around in the mud.
Even the last, couple weeks or month, I thought his comments, even on Hezbollah, that was appalling. Like, it's almost like he's, do you think is he losing it? Or is he just becoming...
his verbal skills are limited. And so he, you know, he's caught, you know, if you get him away from very, 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 you know, you know, the adjectives sort of, he's they're unfamiliar to him, and he's not, you know, and they sort of spill out and he goes too far. You know, he's not very disciplined when it comes to what he says.
Yeah. So what do you want in a president? We've got a war in the Mideast, a war between a superpower, Russia and Ukraine. We've got China on the upswing. We've got North Korea. We've got Iran. What do you want? A petty, psychological, compromised man, or version 2.0 of him in Ron DeSantis? We need nuance. We need truth-telling. We need someone with experience. And we all deserve that. Got to get past the partisanship here, folks, to see what's